what's in the heart of a child. The first 8 to 10 years will begin forming habits, beliefs, values, and attitudes that last for a long time. Little kids do that? Sure they do. From 8 to 10 years, habits. They see things happening. They see their parents acting one way towards some situation, and they go that way too, good or bad. Forming habits, beliefs, and values. It's already started in them. And God is trying to remind us that we come to church every year, every year for some. Well, we come every week. But still, maybe we've never prayed for the youth ministry. We've never prayed for the children's ministry and the ages there and all of that they have to have. They have to have great foundation before they get in junior high even nowadays. Junior high school is no longer your children's ministry. Because now the junior high are going to be running around in some of the circles with the senior high, and a lot of the senior high are way off base now from where they used to be, because they're a senior and they know things and they see things and they understand things, and the young ones coming up before them. That's why Master Club goes from 3-year-olds all the way through 6th grade. That's about as far as we can go from jumping into the teenage level with what we try to do early on in their salvation, things like that. It's the urgency of these days that must grip our heart, the urgency of it. We hear so many things on the news now is up to a urgency matter. But how often do I consider our youth group at urgency matter? Are the 3-year-olds or 4-year-olds or 5, 6, 7s, they need help too, great help, and they need it from the church. And the church should love them and care for them, all of that. So often the potential of a child goes unrecognized, undeveloped, and unused. And that's tragic, because when the potential of a child is never developed, a terrible thing happens. A terrible thing happens. And so just nothing. And you go in and visit in some homes and you'll find there's nothing happening there. And these kids are still growing up and still ready to be, to have an impression upon them for the godly things. But nobody seems to talk to them about that anymore. So imagine this. I love the world. It's always me to have a dream like that. I like to imagine. I love this word. Imagine this. Every unsaved child or teenager you meet in the next 50 years, imagine this, that you meet in the next 50 years could listen to you lead him or her to Christ. How about that? Right here in your church. You don't have to go to some place where they do that all the time. This church, and our church and my church, we need to be doing that all the time. We can imagine, we can dream dreams. Every child I ever meet for the next 50 years as a teacher or worker has the possibility of me leading them to Christ and leading them there forevermore. If I'll just sign up for it, if I'll just show up for it and let them teach me how to be better at working with teenagers or with children, or just staying home and praying for them with a fervent heart to God and to the things that could happen in the children's lives. I love to imagine every unsaved person ever meet could be saved in just a short period of time if I just allow them to do that. Now, as the 4 to 14 window of salvation across the world is here, This is our biggest part right here to work with them, the 4 to 14 years old, including your teenagers, because this is the category where teenagers who do not receive the Lord, there are many of them there, but these can still receive the Lord. But we've got to work at it. We've got to be a part of it. We've got to find out, where can we come? I'll sit over here and just sit in a chair, and you send a little child over there, and I'll tell him whatever you want me to tell him. I'll teach him a little story there all for himself if you want me to do that. But let me do something for God while I'm still alive. I've been in, we've been on the road for 54 years, plus the two churches, Dr. Robinson 20 years and Dr. Charles Keene Milford 20 years. We're still on the road. And there are thousands of independent Baptist churches, much less other churches, that have never had anything for their children. I go in places where the teachers have no lessons whatsoever. They've never had a teacher training like this. Never, never. And so sometimes we're just not good at putting things together and organizing our system. We ought to be. We ought to be the best organized church in this whole town for God, see. You don't have to be the biggest, but the most organized and the ones that will go after the children. And some of the biggest ones in town love the children, but it's not the kind of church we'd like to have them in. But the Bible says, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, and that seemed to be getting earlier and earlier, junior high is not quite a man yet, but a lot of them think they are. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. I spake as a child because I was a child. I understood as a child because I thought as a child. And, you know, that's what we do. We help them. We know, we get to know the children we're dealing with. And we don't call them, hey, you in the blue shirt. That's not how you deal with children. You got to know his name. And it'd be great if you go knock on his door sometime and just talk a little bit to his mom and see if you can't gain some more information about where he is and where you can take him from there. So we go after children because Jesus loves them. That's one of the ways we go after them. We've said three of these. There is potential for every child or teenager to become a child of God. Number two, children and teens are the most fruitful ages for the church, the most fruitful in those teenage years. We've written a whole book on children's and teens, and every ministry we've been in, it was you teach the teenagers how to serve God. They're old enough to serve God. They're old enough to tell another child about the Lord and be careful in doing it and all that. And they can do that. They can do a lot of that. And so, but they've got to have leadership behind them. Number three, we go after children because Jesus loves them. And he reminds us carefully of our verse. When I was a child, I spake as a child. We know that. God told us that. He knows what they're like. I spake as a child because I was a child and so forth. So Jesus tells us, allow them to come. Allow them to be careful now with them when they come, but train them, train them. So is there any way, whether I may work with a ladies' class, and that's fine, but how about the ladies that have children? Could we make contact with the mother and continue to try to move the children into the ministry too? Be a great thing to do, great thing. Children are one quarter of our population and 100% of our future in America. Wow. There's a lot of them out there. A lot of them in the schools that you hear talked about on the news all the time. And we know the direction of many things in our country is going now that we don't agree with. So let's find as many as we can to teach them what God says about this. So we go after children because they're the next generation, the next and the next. You know, godly teenagers can disciple junior age kids or even younger children. You know why it makes it such a good thing for them? Because they have matured to a spiritual level where they now can take the Bible, what they've learned from, and come over here and whatever little verses and things you want to use in your program, and they can take the younger children and sit down with them and teach them along the way. They can teach them along the way like that because the kids will love it. The kids love it. When you first get in junior high, probably the first day, you wish you were in senior high, you know. You want to be like them, not like you are. You're a squirt right now. Somebody will call you that, you know. But you're not a squirt, but you're called a squirt, and that's not good. But they hear things that teenagers talk about. Woo, I've never heard that before. That's the problem. So we need to help them and rescue some of them, really. So we go after children because they're the next generation and next and the next. Number four, the next generation is the church's greatest treasures. Greatest treasure. The children's ministry is not some place we put them in a holding tank while the adults come in and worship God, and then we go get them and take them home. That's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about real life ministry, doing some things that you have never done. You know it's right to do. The Bible tells us it's right to do. Many in our church wants to do that, ways to serve the Lord, and yet some children have never seen in their home anybody even talk about serving the Lord, much less actually doing it. So these are just not little people en route to significance. That's not what we're talking about. They're significant today, right now, today, before we miss them, start missing them in our church. Many churches today rank their priorities with children and teens as coming before adults. And that's why all the nice stuff in our churches sometimes, and the nice classrooms and the facilities in there and all that is really super nice. And you go in a child's room and now there's a blank table there, scratches all over the thing and hardly anything to look at that livens up the place a little bit. It's not always that way, but I've been in a whole lot of them that are. So the battle of many churches today rank their priorities with children and teens before adults. In budgeting, I started off with zero budget for a church of 5,000 children's ministry. We had all the bases covered as far as Sunday school because most of our lay people. Now, these are churches that were up in 5,000 coming to church every week. And they were teaching and all of that, and all that was just fine. But there was nobody would stay there during the week and plan the youth ministry or plan the children's ministry. They just didn't have it at that time. And so the second week I was there, he found out I was doing some Bible clubs that I knew how to do a few of those. And I did three or four of them, Bible clubs, in a neighborhood home, like maybe your home. You might say today, I'm not going to have a crowd like that coming. Well, that's all right. But some of you could and have the help to do it. Some churches do it in schools nowadays. But we had gradually went up to 40 Bible clubs around the city of Chattanooga with some of the students running it because they couldn't get other things to do in the church because they went home during the summer and every chance they get, they're away and they're just not consistent enough to do big roles like that. So we started developing it. Five of those students would take on one Bible club, and it would be in that neighborhood home, and they address that neighborhood. And down the road a little bit, there'd be another one that happens that addresses that area over there, and all the way across through there like that. And it just went on and on, it was a wonderful way for our teenagers because our teenagers are the ones who got them there. The adults didn't get them there. We trained them how, but they didn't get it there. So we had to start from scratch. I started out of a tin box. I was going through $80,000 out of a tin box before they ever gave ever said he needs a checkbook or something. But we kept on going. You can go over those odds. You can still go over that. But in budgeting and space and well-trained, qualified teachers, that's different. That's why your church had the training yesterday for qualified teachers. And those that have been qualified for years want to even be more qualified. We don't give them a certificate or anything. Just be better than you've ever been before in your teaching. Make it more clear to them. You're not talking to yourself. You're talking to a 13-year-old down here. What kind of life does he have at home? What are the things that he would do as far as fun and things he would get involved in because of all the bad characters around him? And we would work on that and work on that part of it. And that was so good. The spiritual decisions are often made early in a child's life. I read a little statement in a mission magazine, several years ago. And it said, just a little picture set out here with, and there was no story behind it or anything, just sitting there in the middle of this page. And I read that, and it said, 85% of everybody who ever gets saved in our churches are between the ages, that go to the mission field in our churches are between the ages of 4 and 14. He said, by 12 years of age, 85% know by 12 years of age if God wants them to be a missionary someday. Now, like that, they're talking about just in your mind, you think, you hope, you dream, you think you might want to be a missionary someday. You're not yet. You can do your part here at home, be a home missionary, but someday they want to do that. And I checked out another group that had 1,000 on the field at that time. So I looked at two mission groups that had 4,000 missionaries on the field. And every single one of those would highlight that same number between those ages and years that went to the mission later on. Here's one right here, Margaret Stringer. Have y'all ever had Margaret Stringer, a missionary in here? She's a great one, Pastor. She only lives she lives down in Taylor's, South Carolina. And she travels all over the place. She was in West Papua, Indonesia. And this was a long time ago. She spent 40 years there. This was the jungles. This was the headhunters. She got through her college and went to and after she graduated, she went to Dr. Robertson's office. He told me about that, and said, "Dr. Robertson, I want to be a missionary. That's what I've planned on. It's what I've taken all these classes for." And he says, "But I want to go to the headhunters." Here's a little lady about this size, not with two other people going with her, just her. I want to go to the Everybody talks about all these other fields, but I don't see any men or anybody else talking about the headhunters. That's where I want to go. He said, "Oh, yeah?" That's about what I would say. "Oh, yeah? You think you know that for sure?" And she knew it for sure. She spent 40 years with the headhunters. Slept in a tree most of the time. She's got pictures, even black and white pictures from the field at that time. And man, you can just go on and on with the accomplishments of her. She did a lot on getting a Bible into their language and so forth. But she stayed there 40 years. And we brought her over to our mission conference at our church. And we have a kids' mission conference when we do that, because I want children to do more than just sit in the auditorium and color books. We go in there and they can all make a big circle around a genuine missionary. And she was a genuine missionary. We helped her make some worms, fake worms that the kids had to come up and take one out and eat it, because she talked about what she ate all the time. But it wasn't really a juicy worm, big, fat, juicy worm like they ate, but it was something that she could illustrate through that, you know. But what a great lady. And she goes to churches and is part of the biggest part of the missionary the time we've had her. But that was somebody who'd had that on their heart, just like a lot of the others. 85%. By the age of 12, she said exactly that. We've got a little bulletin on that in the Master Club ministry when you're talking about missions. that tells about her life and where she was and some pictures in there and all that for the kids to look at as they come along. But she's still alive and well and still coming back after 40 years there in that land. The helicopter brought her in, wouldn't even land. They brought her down to where there was a big stump hanging up quite a little ways. And she had to get out of the helicopter and get on that tree trunk and shimmy down a little bit. By the time she got there, the whole pack of people who lived there were there. All the men were there shouting with their little knives and their spears and all that, and put her in a circle and going around and just, you know, all of that kind of thing. And within 5 minutes after she arrived there, they had her in what they call the long tank. And that was a long building, as they would call it. And that's where everybody, after their raids of other groups in the woods, they would come back and they would, that's where they would eat the ones they kill. That's a headhunter. You don't see a lot of it today. There's still some of it that day, because there's lots of places. But here's a lady that stands up and said, "Dr. Robinson, I want to go where the headhunters are going." And I'm going. And she did. 40 years. And if you had her here sometime, she'd pour her heart out to you. And but 75% of our missionaries on the field today believe that God laid missions on their heart by the age of that age. All right, so if a child can dream of being a doctor or lawyer or business person or ball player, why can't they dream of being a teacher or a preacher or a missionary someday? Why can't they dream of that too? Nothing wrong with that. But maybe we just never tell them you could pray that way, you know. Talk to the parents about it. Think about serving your God for the next 20, 30 years in leading children or teenagers to Christ. Imagine that. Imagine you doing that. Maybe you've never led anybody to Christ. You want to. Your heart's right. But just the place is not there yet. Well, get in the place where they are doing that and sign up for it and do a lot. It'll be for your most fruitful work that you ever do. The great D.L. Moody, we've heard of him many years, near the end of his ministry said, "If I had my life to live over, I'd spend it on children." And I'd say, "Me too, Mr. Moody. Me too." I'll never forget. A little holy terror. His reputation started in our first grade and went all up to the third grade. And finally, my wife had the third grade. I think it was over 300 entered in the third grade category of the church at that time. And he was always called the little, what do they call him, Paul? The little monster? Or the little kid you couldn't control. He'd come in and he'd, as soon as he'd get in 5 minutes, he'd be laying down on the floor in the class, big classroom. Then they go to the little classrooms. He'd be laying down on the floor, kicking his little heels up, just screaming. And if you didn't stop him, he'd run out and head at the head of the stairs for this six-story educational building. He'd head straight for the top of the stairs and lay down on them and stiffen his body. And there was only just a little thin layer between his head and the concrete, and you could just see his head banging against as he, and he'd slide all the way down. And if you didn't catch him before he got down there, he'd do it again. Until my wife went out and found out things about that young child. The biggest thing was he was hungry. And hungry makes you feel bad. I don't think I've ever been hungry a day of my life. But when you are hungry, you don't want to laugh and joke and things like that. You just don't feel good at all. And that's the way a lot of little kids are. He gets up by himself, puts his own little clothes on that are all wrinkled. He gets his own breakfast if there is any. And he goes outside to wait for the bus to come by because he doesn't know who that new man in laying in the bed in there with his mama is. Somebody new almost every week. But he comes and he comes and he gets there and he's everybody's so excited and he's so empty of what he needs and that even to down to the food level. My wife fixed up a plate for him. She went out of his home and talked to him and saw the mother and saw the figure out why he was like that when he came there. Nobody could handle him. And when he turned around at promotion day and started up the stairs, I'll never forget it. He was standing there. I was standing on this side of the stairs, and Janice was on the other side watching him come up, going to new classes. He was coming to the third grade now. Soon as he saw her, I was watching him. His little eyes lit up because she had been in his home. And got up to the top, and we'd cleared out a little storage room, very small, just a small thing. And we put a little table in there. She put a tablecloth on it, and she had breakfast for this little kid. So when he caught up to the top of the stairs, she was like this, and a big smile on his face. He'd never smiled before. And we opened the door and put him in and gave him his food and just shut the door and let the others get in their classes. He came out, and not one time ever did he act like that. None. But no teacher had ever been out there. They didn't know why. They just fussed at him for first grade and second grade. Nobody had really found out what the problem here because it was nobody. Some of the teachers weren't going after their people. So there's a lot to do, and there's a lot that you can get involved in. I've got to stop here in just a moment. I'm just trying to give you this in a way that maybe can stir your heart. I remember Eva Woodward, 50 years of teaching children in our church. I've got her picture right here. 50 years of little, I think it was third graders. She died about 3 years ago at 90 years of age. Still teaching up to the 2 weeks before her death. The kids loved her. They loved her. The kids can write poems and all kinds of things. We have that in Master Club, and you'll see them. But a lot of kids have never thought of something like that. Here's one from, a third grader. First time he's ever wrote a note to God. That's what we call it. Up in heaven, down here. That's the title. This is a third grader. Up in heaven, there are streets of gold. Down here, there are clunks of mold. up in heaven, Jesus is light. Down here, we always fight. Up in heaven, there'll be no sun, S-U-N. Down here, there has to be one. up in heaven, I like to sing. Down here, I like to praise the King. That's from a three-year-old. Never done that before in her life. We got all kinds of things that go through that in Master Club and all that. When I murmur, well done. Oh, that's a great one. It was a sixth grader, I believe, that did that. One did I'll just can't tell you all those, but it's so much. How about 8 minutes of giving them could they stand up and in 8 minutes, right here, could they tell you the clearest presentation of the gospel? Sure they can. They can stand here with a Bible just like Pastor does, and they have prepared before, and somebody sit with them and answered questions for them and kind of reorganize a little bit to help them be better with that. But they can come right there and stand and give you an eight-minute message on that. Can they do poems? Well, sure they can, and do all kinds of them. Bible storytelling, as if they are the teacher. Can they do that? Sure they can. I want to show you. I'll just hold up for a minute because our time's about over here. These are things. I'll leave them up here, and maybe at the end of the service you can look at some of them if you want to. But these are some of the things that we use in Master Club. You can't see these pictures all the way back, I know. But here's a puppet team. The ones on the puppet team are kids. They're third and fourth graders behind there doing all that, just them. Here's one with doing object lesson on sin. Here's one that's doing the Bible storytelling as if she was the Sunday school teacher. Here's one that is a young preacher man right here. Here's one telling another Bible story over here. Here's one with an ensemble singers they put together, some quiz things they put together, some crafts they put together. Here's a trio of girls and all kind of things like that. He's got tons of them. Here are, in fact, here's one that we were using at camp, and this little girl is she's going to tell the wordless book story. You know, the wordless book story, it has colors in it. So she and her mom, they fixed up an outfit like that, like a clown, but it's she goes through all the colors and goes through that ministry like that to give her testimony. This young man right here, I saw him preach his first message as a fourth grader. He's our he's our pastor now. We'll be fully in about 3 weeks. He's our pastor now, one of the most brilliant young men I've ever seen. First time he preached, his mom stood there and watched him and just poured her heart out. Kids just one after another sitting there wanting to do that, give their testimony or preach, and Bible storytelling, object lessons, and young preacher boys just all over the place. So there are things you can look at over here if you want to when you have a little bit of time. Can't go through all that. But a wonderful thing for you to do would be in the children's ministry. If you want to be in them, you'll probably look like this sometime because this is part of the teacher's rhythm band. The teacher's rhythm band. The kids absolutely go nuts over that. But we're trying to keep them laughing, and then we're trying to keep them on track with the Lord. But these are all guys in here, our leaders. These are the leaders of our church, folks. That's why we write books all the time, you know, and you used to have stuff like that going on. All right. But what we're trying to do is just give you some interest. Do you have a place that you can serve? You have a place that you can serve with them. They can do all kinds of things, Bible games of all kinds, Ten Commandments, they know the whole thing, Old Testament, New Testament themes, the wordless book, all of those type things are things they play, but they learn as they play. How about Bible crafts, hymn stories and Bible quizzing and 20-minute essay? They can sit down with a sheet of paper with nothing on it and have never been told what the topic is, and they have sit down and they have 20 minutes to write an essay on some topic that you have that's in the Bible. They know how to use a Bible guide. They know how to find things quickly in their scriptures. Kids can do all kinds of things. Churches can keep them from doing all kind of things too. Some of them because they just don't feel like they need to put enough money in. These are just kids en route to significance. They're not there yet. I know, neither were you at one time. And so I'd start praying for them, get the names of them, and ask God to maybe get you a spot somewhere along the way. And through the years, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, just through the years, all over the, every child comes in here could be saved before they walk out the door, and it could be you. Dear Lord, thank you so much for maybe opening our eyes just a little bit more to what children's ministry is. And teenagers, I could have done twice as much with them because they're the ones that make it happen. We trained them how. We had 7,000 teenagers on a Friday night in our church auditorium, a 6,000-seat auditorium church. We had 7,000 teenagers there. Guess who got them there? Teenagers got them there. I didn't. I just told them how. Just told them how. And when we had the invitation, I had almost 5,500 people around ready to work with those that came forward. We had 504 come forward at the end of the message. Why? Because teenagers went after teenagers. Teenagers like teenagers more than opening the door and seeing me there. They would rather see you there as a teenager. See. So, Lord, dear God, help us. Help us in your precious name. Amen.